Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in to Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, joining us on the SDCCU fan hotline. The hero from yesterday's game, walk-off Grand Slam, Hunter Renfrow. Hunter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, doing well.
I think the most obvious question is you come up in that spot last night, or yesterday, especially considering the way you guys lost the two games previously. Okay. You come up in that spot, bases loaded. What are you trying to do in that situation?
Just really trying to get a good pitch to hit and try to make sure I get one in. Just trying to get a base hit, and he's able to throw me one middle in, and I was able to get the barrel to it, and left spark. So,
did you feel the ball hit your bat? Did you hear the crowd as you were running around the bay? What, like, take us through that moment, because none of us are ever going to get to experience it. Did you feel anything until water came splashing on you when you got the home plate? What's it like even running around after doing something like that?
It was pretty special. I mean, obviously, yeah. I felt the ball hit the bat. I knew, obviously, I've hit a few home runs in my day.
Just a few.
So I know what it feels like, and good contact, and I knew that it was gone. I knew at least it was a double, at least, you know, by far. So, you know, I hit it, turned around, saw Hedgie jumping over the railing and beating me in the home plate before I even left the box. And, you know, it was a pretty special moment, and obviously the fan eruption was incredible. So it was awesome.
From a strategic standpoint, we've seen Kenley Jansen a lot. Mm-hmm. I know personally that is not an easy at bat to have. What is your game plan against a guy like that? You almost 90% sure a cutter's coming, but it still seems pretty difficult to get barrel on. What is the game plan going up against a guy like that?
I mean, it's almost to the point where he's not Mariano Rivera. Let's just put that there, but it's Mariano Rivera like.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, 6'5", 6'6", whatever he is, and he really gets on top of the baseball and drives the baseball with a good spin rate, and it cuts across, and it's really hard to get on top of the baseball. So what I was really trying to focus on was, you know, staying above the baseball, making sure I stay above it and not just pop it up or foul it straight back and take a good clean swing at it and make sure I time him up, because that's another part of his game plan where he wants to get everybody off balance with his timing stuff. So I was making sure I was on time and in balance and take a good swing at it. And
he does kind of give you like a right hand version of Clayton Kershaw on one pitch, and then he'll kind of do his normal.
He'll do about three or four different variations of it.
Hunter Renfrow is with us, SDCCU fan hero hotline today, 97.3 The Fan. Again, I'm going to throw a question at you just as a normal person, because we've all thought of hitting a walk-off home run in our lives. We've all gone through it probably when we were little kids. How many times had you done something like that? Have you ever done anything like that? And how many times have you thought, I could do this in a big league game, and then what, you wake up from the dream, or does it actually seem like you could actually, it could be a reality someday like it was yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, to the point of coming into Major League Baseball, I'm not sure if I've ever hit a walk-off home run. I just don't remember it, or, you know, it just didn't happen come about to my mind. But, you know, I hit one against the Brewers, and I guess it was 2017, and unbelievable special moment. And from then on, I've hit, you know, one little walk-off base hit, and now I hit the walk-off Grand Slam. You know, it's all incredible. No matter what it is, you can't top a walk-off hit or a walk-off a home run like that. It's definitely, you know, tops in your book. But obviously, you know, winning the World Series, obviously different. But
to win the World Series. Yeah. That'd be cool.
But you know, personally, it's very special.
You guys have had a pretty consistent rotation in the outfield of how it's gone. How have you personally been able to adjust to that that rotation?
Just knowing my role. Just knowing my role. Go out there, dominate against left-handed pitching, and really dominate, you know, left field or right field or whatever I'm playing that day, and really focus in on my game plan and do the best I can out there. And I think we've, you know, he's given us plenty of opportunity and playing time out there, and you know, we don't know how the rest of the season is going to play out as far as injuries or anything like that. So whenever you get your chance, you got to go out there and ball out.
Do you believe in a little, you know, karma, a little special type season? I mean, I know you got to a College World Series, and you were part of a team that probably had some special wins that year, I'm assuming, at Mississippi State. So you win a game like that yesterday. To me, that's something that can carry a ball club for a while, and not necessarily win every game you play, but just in the back of your minds knowing, hey, we have a shot every single night out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we proved that the first two games, you know, go out there and getting ahead early and just couldn't quite finish it off. And, you know, I think that really focused in on, you know, us really finishing off that last game. And we really focused down, you know, I think Will and Manny both got huge bunts down at the end there to get make the bases loaded for Greg. And he just wasn't able to cash in. And so I just knew I got to go up there and do what I could to help the team. And I was able to pay off for me.
Hunter, I want to ask you a little bit about your defense. It's improved drastically over the last 2 years. We're not even talking about your arm anymore. I mean, you've made some plays with your glove out there. Has that been a point of emphasis for you since you've been at the big league level?
Yeah, I always want to improve on everything I do, whether it be, you know, play discipline, draw more walks or give more power or just, you know, doing the hits, and especially in defense. You know, defense is a huge part of winning ball games. You know, the first two plays I made in the outfield, the first game, helped the team at least stay in the game.
Yeah,
you know, those could have been huge.
Those
plays.
Are great plays.
Yeah, and I knew that coming into it, where I had to go out there and I had to focus in on defense and really figure out some stuff that worked for me and get my routes down right. So,
and it's not even just the routes. I mean, there's been many times you don't get enough credit for it, but keeping guys at first base on balls in the gap, that's the thing that I've noticed the most about you in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, I try to cut down the distance really quick, you know, whether it be a tough angle or you know, going a little deeper. But I really try to cut it off, you know, as soon as possible as far as going to the gap. And I'm some of those that might get by me. And that's why I hope Manny's back there or Will's right back there and to back me up. But I really try to focus on cutting the angle down as fast as I possibly can, getting it and getting it into second base as quickly as possible, and try to keep that guy on first base where to keep the double play in order.
Well, Hunter, you've been very gracious with your time, man. Absolutely. We appreciate it. Also, once again, congratulations. That was awesome to be a part of yesterday.
It was great. Thank you very much.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself.
Howdy do.
Now is your time. Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Now you're talking.
Chris versus the Fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Scrabby. Give them the rules.
First off, I just want to say, you guys are in for it today with the questions. I spent all weekend doing these questions.
You guys, you must be referring to the fans and Chris.
Yes.
I'm just...
That's true. Yeah. I would say, yeah, the fans and Chris. Actually, I think I did this for Chris so that he can miss all the questions on the day that he does his first pitch. Anyway, the rules are you have to make it through three questions. Each question is going to get more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on. If you get the question wrong and Chris gets that same question right, you're eliminated. But if he gets it wrong, then you have a chance to move on to the next question. Or if you're already on the third question, you will win the game.
All right.
Indeed. Let's get to it. Caller number one, Sean and Santee. Welcome to Gwen and Chris. Happy Monday.
What's going on, guys? Happy Monday, man.
Hey, Sean.
Let's get to it.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Awesome interview.
First question, how many times has Tom Brady won the NFL MVP award?
MVP, I'm going to go with twice.
Twice is incorrect.
Ooh.
Oh, Chris, for the steal.
I was going to go with three, and that's probably incorrect too. But I remember when Favre won his third, that was a big deal. I can't see more than three, even though it seems like he probably has been around long enough to have more than three.
We're going with three?
I'm going with three.
Three is correct.
Wow.
Sorry.
Sorry, Sean.
Sorry, Sean.
Thanks for competing. Let's get to the next caller.
You got to remember Peyton Manning stole a few of his.
He did.
Because they were like going back and forth for a couple years there.
He was setting touchdown records and all kinds of crazy things there for a sec. Corey in Fallbrook, welcome to Gwen and Chris. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Hey, Corey.
Let's get to the first question. Where did current Aztec head football coach Rocky Long... Rocky Long.
Rocky who?
Long.
Rocky who?
Coach before he came to SDSU. So let me repeat the question one more time. Where did current Aztec head football coach Rocky Long coach before he came to San Diego State University?
I want to say the University of New Mexico.
That is correct.
That's a good thing to say.
Let's get to question number two. Ken Griffey Jr. holds the record for consecutive games with a home run. How many games in a row did he hit a home run?
I have no idea. I'm going to say nine.
Nine is incorrect.
Okay, Ken Griffey Jr. does hold the record. It is also held by Don Mattingly.
That's correct.
It is also held by a guy named Dale Long. So the next time you're going to do a question like this,
you got to
get it
everybody.
Accurate.
You got to include everybody.
The number is eight.
That is correct.
Yes. But there's three guys that hold that record.
All right.
Look how mad he is.
I am.
He is so angry right now.
I went to go find it, but he's gone.
Okay. So we move into the next one?
Yeah, because Chris got it right, right?
Yes, Chris got it right.
Yes, yeah, so next move guy. To the next one.
Next guy.
Is that Arby?
I believe so.
Arby and Chula Vista, welcome to Gwen and Chris.
Hey, Arby.
Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday, guys.
Let's go.
Let's get to the first question.
Boy, Don Mattingly and Dale Long not going to be happy
with
you.
Oh, my goodness.
Leaving them out of that answer.
Where will the 2020 Summer Olympics be held?
That'll be Tokyo.
That is correct.
Hey, I'm glad you got that, Arby, because I had no idea.
Question number two. What Hall of Fame linebacker played for Rocky Long in college?
Drawing a blank there.
Is that going to be your answer?
No.
You don't know.
I don't know is incorrect.
I love when Tony does that.
Chris, Urlacher. For the steal. Brian Urlacher is correct.
Dang.
Sorry, RB. Thanks for competing.
Enjoy your hamburgers.
They don't have hamburgers at Arby's.
Enjoy your roast beef.
That's not right. You know what? I stick up for all the contestants. I don't stick up for.
Manny and South Bay.
Don't be taking shots at our contestants.
His name was Arby. It was right there.
It was low-hanging fruit.
I take it every time.
Was it Manny?
It was Manny.
Manny's
South Bay.
Hi, Manny.
Happy Monday. Welcome to Gwen and Chris.
Our guy.
What's going on, boys? I'm going to go watch Chris Ello throw a perfect game today.
Oh,
yes.
Giving him some confidence. He's a little nervous right now. He's not going to admit to it.
He is so nervous. What do you mean he's not going to admit to it? I've been admitting to it all weekend.
All right, question number one. What year did the Cubs last win the World Series?
1918. Oh, wait. Last win?
When's the last World Series they won?
Okay, 2016.
Thank you. I was worried there for a sec there, Manny. Question number two.
I jumped the gun to you.
In what is considered the worst trade in NFL draft history, Mike Ditka traded 8 draft picks to the Redskins in order to select this running back.
The man who now lives for 20 every time. Ricky Williams.
That is correct. Ricky Dreadlock Williams.
Do you remember the picture of Ditka with the dreadlocks and Ricky Williams with a, I think he had a wedding gown on.
He did.
On the cover
he
of
had a wedding
ESPN
gown on.
The magazine.
How
Wait,
did they get him to
didn't
do that?
Ricky just almost win Big Brother?
He did.
He came up second, right?
Yeah.
I think he would have won. I think he gave it up to the other gal because she needed the money more than him.
Good for him.
He was a good dude.
All right.
Competitor is he?
Who's our next? Oh, no.
No, one
We're
more.
Still on Manny.
Yeah, one more.
One more for Manny. For the this is I'm for the tickets.
Roll. Yeah, this is Manny. This is for the win and the tickets.
Big
who holds the record? Who holds the record for most yards in a college football game?
In what?
Most
passing,
yards
running, punting,
overall. Passing. Is it overall?
Overall.
Overall. Yes.
Total yards. College game?
Yes.
Bro, I'm thinking it got to either be Johnny Football or Tim Tebow. I'm going with Tim Tebow just because he is Mr. College Football.
Terrific guess, but it's an incorrect guess.
This is just one of these questions that is just not asked correctly again. Because there's
just answer the question.
No, I'm trying to. There's a rushing record. There's a passing record.
It says most yards, so that's everything.
Most yards was that
that's,
kick returns,
that's
punt
total.
Returns,
everything.
Fumble
total.
Returns,
everything. Total.
That's BS. That's just that's
how about
just,
you just answer the question.
Thank
how about
you,
that?
Tony. Finally.
Scrabble-lingus.
He doesn't know. That's why he doesn't want to answer.
Well, I know who the all right. David Klingler.
David Klingler. Is incorrect. Manny, congratulations. You are a winner.
Don't think it's incorrect yet, but go ahead. Who is it?
The answer is Patrick Mahomes. 819 yards. He had 734 passing yards, 85 rushing on October 22nd, 2016. Versus
okay, then you need to ask the question, who holds the record for most total yards in a game? That's the question, not most yards. It's total yards. That's passing and running is total yards. You just said most yards. So I went with the passing yard champion.
After we said everything?
I know I specifically said total yards after you objected to most yards.
All right.
Well, I'm happy that Manny won.
Manny,
I am too. Manny,
nice work,
won.
Manny.
Ding.
Manny, you're going to see the Padres take on the Pirates Saturday, May 18th. All fans in attendance that evening will receive a Padres hoodie presented by Toyota. You can see that hoodie if you come out to the game tonight and look up at the scoreboard.
Yes, you can.
Tony Gwynn Jr. will be modeling it up on the big, gigantic, huge scoreboard tonight.
Thank God I had a fresh cut that day, too.
You look good, man. You look good.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sella back with you, Gwynn and Chris. I got first pitch duties tonight, but before that, we continue our program right up until 6 o'clock, and very excited to have with us on the program, joining us from MLB.com, Mr. Will Leitch. Will, how are you today, sir?
Good. Hey, good luck with that first throw. Remember, the goal of every first pitch is not to become a viral video the next day.
Yes,
that's the
you
goal,
and
so good luck.
You and everybody has told me that, and it's scaring the living daylights out of me. But you know, we'll see what happens. Hey, Will, what's your take? What's the kind of the, or was there a national take on this weekend's Dodger Padres series? There's three fantastic games. The people here in San Diego, I think, thoroughly enjoyed them. Padres, I think, proved to themselves they can play with the Dodgers, and then obviously it was very important for them to get that one win yesterday.
Yeah, you know, the Dodgers are the hill that everybody's got to climb, right? And that's really not just the case for teams in the National League West. That's really kind of across the board. They've gone to two straight World Series. They've won all these division titles. If you are competing that tightly with the Dodgers, you're doing something right. And I think there's something to be said for that, particularly kind of early on in this process. It's exciting to see. Obviously, you know, you would have liked to have seen the results maybe better the first couple of days, but I think the way that it came out Sunday, you know, that's what you want. That's what you're looking for. It's what nationally people are kind of eyeing the Padres, right? Like the Padres are in that mode. Not dissimilar, frankly, to where, say, the Cubs were in 2014 or the Astros were in 2013. The idea that, okay, this is a team that's taking steps back and kind of building something. They're doing something a little different. They're taking their time to do it. And now they're starting to add pieces, and you're seeing that excitement happen. So what you're looking to see how they match up against a team like the Dodgers, I think it's difficult to argue. I still think the Dodgers are a better team, but if that is your every game is tight like that, and then to have that incredible result Sunday, it's hard to argue that there's not something pretty exciting coming.
Will Leitch is with us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Joins us from MLB.com. Padres, Dodgers. When Manny Machado signed in San Diego, what did you feel kind of the national reaction was to that? And what do you think the reaction is to Manny Machado being here now? Has it changed at all in the couple of months since all that took place?
Certainly when he signed, there was something about, obviously, people had waited so long for Machado and then later Harper to sign that no matter whenever he signed, of course, there's just going to be some sort of relief that we could all kind of go on with our lives a little bit. But certainly when it came to Machado and going to San Diego, what was fun about that is, you know, listen, nationally speaking, for better or for worse, and mostly worse, the Padres, even though they've had some decent teams and some exciting players, it's been a while since they felt like a team you had to pay very close attention to. It was a team that had a beautiful ballpark and a great fan base, and certainly seemed like a very excellent opportunity for someone at some point, but it just hadn't really broken through yet. And so what that signified, never minding just the fact that Machado is a great player, but the fact that he would choose to go there, he would look at the Padres franchise and say, yes, this is a team that's got a lot of talent coming, and this is a team I want to grow older with. But also for the Padres to step up and actually pay him that kind of money really spoke well for both sides. Remember, when Machado was on the free agent market, I think you never knew what kind of bidder would come out of nowhere. But in a lot of ways, you know, the White Sox were another team that also had a lot of young talent, and I think it actively tried to court him. And I wonder if the question was, would Machado's choice of San Diego, if he chose San Diego or the White Sox, give an indicator of which franchise was a little bit farther ahead in kind of the rebuild? And I think it clearly has been the case. Now that he's there, I can't speak for you guys, but I got to say, from the outside, he looks pretty comfortable in a Padres uniform to me. He hasn't really had like his full breakout yet, but clearly, you know, you've seen some exceptional defensive plays. To see kind of that kind of talent, and that kind of consistent talent that no matter what, you know, defense never rests, that kind of idea, whether he's a third or whether he's a short, there's so much talent there. It seems like he fits, and it seems like him being there solidifies the Padres as a team to be reckoned with. And it's a team that you watch now. There's so much, all that young talent the Padres had before Machado signed. Now you look at it and you're like, wow, okay, now these guys don't have to be the centerpieces. They can be the supporting pieces, and I think it makes all of them that much more exciting.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, Will. I mean, it really is something. I didn't expect Manny Machado to have the kind of impact that he's had just in terms of watching him play baseball. I heard he was good, but we don't see Baltimore very often here and just saw such a small sample size in L.A., but he has really been remarkable defensively, and then this weekend came alive with the bat. Will Leitch, MLB.com, joining us. I think one of the interesting aspects of this series, which is starting tonight between the Padres and the Mets, is the rookies. Pete Alonso of the New York Mets was the first rookie of the month this year. The Padres, of course, have Fernando Tatis Jr. on the injured list. They also have Chris Paddock, who has come on the scene and kind of been a bit of a phenom. I mean, you got to love baseball right now. The whole National League, it seems like everybody's got a couple of these rookies, and these kids are starting to take over the sport. It's going to be fun to see a couple of them match up against each other tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to see, too, not just all the talent that you're seeing in baseball now, but you're seeing teams embrace the talent, right? There used to be this real kind of big culture in baseball that, hey, Rook, you got to learn your way over here, and you got to ride the pine for a while, ride the bench for a while until we're ready to, so you've earned your stripes around here. And I think basically teams have realized there's so much talent. These players are arriving in the major leagues more ready than they were in the past. Not fully polished, finished product to any stretch of the imagination, but certainly guys are showing up ready to go pretty much from the get-go. And it's all across the sport. I mean, I don't know if you saw Nick Senzel from the Reds today in like his third or fourth game, hit two homers in his first two at-bats. I mean, there is so much talent across the board in baseball right now. And the talent is being trusted by teams. It's exciting to see. You know, this is the thing, right? This is, I know it was hard. I'm sure it was hard for a lot of Padres fans after having some struggles, having kind of been in the wilderness for a while to say, okay, guys, you have the team be told by their team, you have to be patient. You have to be patient. Hold in there. We're going to accumulate talent. Hang in. They're like, yeah, we've heard this all before. Now you're starting to see the fruits of that patience. You're starting to see the results of hanging in. And listen, there's a lot of teams with young talent. I got to tell you, from the outside, the Padres have as much of it as any team in baseball, and there's more coming. So it's a really good position to be in. It's exciting for the game to see. Everyone likes to see the new guys come in there. You always appreciate veterans, but to see someone comes in that's new and exciting, it gives an extra little charge throughout the ballpark, and clearly the Padres, and yes, to that extent as well, the Mets have it going right now.
It has been exactly that way. Will Leitch, national correspondent from MLB.com. Last thing, Will, before we let you go, and really appreciate your time and great stuff. What's going on behind the scenes in baseball right now, in kind of a Reader's Digest version, with the fact that Keuchel and Kimbrel haven't signed yet, and the free agent money was down and stuff? I mean, quietly, is there anything building there that might lead to a head eventually down the road between the players and the owners?
It's certainly worrisome. I don't think there's any question about that. I think that in the last, there have been some signs that have been willing to at least talk to one another. Keuchel and Kimbrel seem, I wouldn't say they are outliers because they're obviously really talented players, particularly someone like Keuchel. Keuchel is obviously a good pitcher, but I mean, look, we've all seen the way baseball's been played for this first month plus of the season. The type of pitcher that Keuchel is, a pitch-to-contact guy who kind of relies on defense and kind of wile, is great and very useful. But, I mean, you look at baseball right now, so many hits are, I mean, there's not a lot of balls in contact that aren't going out of the park. So, like, you know, I think that, and I say that now in full appreciation of Keuchel, but I think that he, understandably, for a lot, had been really kind of building up for this offseason to get a big deal that he felt like he kind of earned. And I think baseball has moved away from him a little bit. I would argue he still has tons of value for a team and probably should be signed by now. But, you know, I think that when it comes to the labor situation, I would say that more money was spent than I think necessarily has there been given enough credit for, I would argue, this offseason. But I also would certainly have to argue that to see those two guys unsigned, to see players, like look at a guy like Nick Markakis. Like this is a guy that's like just been such a consistent hitter for so long, signed this really tiny 1 year, like $2 million deal. It does feel, if you're a veteran player, it's a tough spot for you right now. And if you look at the extension that Ozzie Albies signed, if he feels that kind of pressure to sign what's pretty inarguably an under market deal, the Players Association noticed that. So you'd like to see, as a fan of baseball, the one thing I want baseball to do is to always play. That's all I ask of it, is to always
play. Yes, please,
have
right.
So I hopefully both sides, though, I think there is frustration on both sides, particularly on the player side. You do hope that everyone keeps their eyes on the larger prize here, that there's got to be baseball to make this thing going. And I think that's important for both sides. Even if they're right now, I would argue the players might have a little bit better case. You hope that there's not so much open hostility that they can't get something figured out as this comes a little closer in the next couple of years.
Yeah, we just got to show everybody tape of this weekend's Padre-Dodger series, and they'll all fall in love with baseball again. It was fantastic theater, great stuff to watch. Will, great stuff. Enjoyed talking to you. Look forward to catching up with you down the road. Appreciate you joining us here in San Diego.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Absolutely. Good luck tonight.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, not only does Matt Scraby step into the Big Five limelight and spotlight, but Thomas Andrews steps into the role of master of ceremonies. Thomas, are you about ready to go with the Big Five?
I am, guys. You ready?
I don't know. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm actually not fine. There's just no way I'm going to be fine today.
No.
I'm going to be nervous the whole day, so I'll just be all right. Well, Scraby, though, I can't speak for him.
I'm doing great. I mean, I took a great video of Chris warming up on the field earlier at 97.3 The Fan SD on Twitter. You can see that.
Okay.
I'm doing really well.
All right, let's see what happens with the Big Five here.
Let's go to it.
Number five.
All right, on Saturday, the Cincinnati Reds released veteran outfielder Matt Kemp, who is currently recovering from a fractured rib. Kemp has been had a tough year, hitting just .200 with one homer and five RBIs and 62 plate appearances. The rib injury and the Reds' decision to promote top prospect Nick Senzel forced the hands. Ugh. Do you think Matt Kemp has anything left in the tank for a team this year at the age of 34? And we'll go with Chris first.
All right, I'm going to answer this in a very positive manner because I know that Matt Kemp is a very good friend of my partner, Tony Gwynn Jr., and he's a friend of ours. He's a friend of the show, and I root for Matt Kemp. I know that that's not a popular thing to do in these parts, but I root for Matt Kemp. I like Matt Kemp, and I would love to see him go somewhere, probably to the American League, though. Step in as a designated hitter against some left-handed pitching. And I think under those circumstances, he could still hit you 15 to 20 home runs this year. I'm not surprised that the Reds did this. I mean, this is what's happening right now in baseball. I mean, Matt Kemp shouldn't have been surprised. I mean, if you're over the age of 30 and you get hurt and they bring up a superstar stud prospect from the minor leagues, you might want to start packing your bags. So this was not a stunner to me, but, you know, look, Matt Kemp got injured chasing a fly ball here at Petco Park a couple of weeks ago. Like I said, I'm a Matt Kemp fan, so I hope he lands somewhere and still has a little something left. What about you, Scraby?
Yeah, I'm a Matt Kemp fan too, and it's tough for me, like you said, because he's such good friends with Tony Gwynn Jr., but I think that he's actually been depressed this whole year because he got traded to the Cincinnati Reds, who are not going to be a very good team.
And he had a great year last year for the Dodgers.
He did. So he went from a team that was going to contend for another World Series spot to a team that's not very good rebuilding at the age of 34. So I think he kind of saw the writing on the wall when the Dodgers traded him to Cincinnati. But I'm with Chris and Tony. I'm going to piggyback off them and say he's going to find a spot in the American League. And I think he's going to play pretty well because he doesn't have to worry about being in the field. He can just worry about being a hitter and doing what he does best at the plate.
By the way, I can't believe I'm about to say this, Thomas. You might want to push the record
yes,
button.
Yes, please.
That was a really good point you made on
Thank
the
you.
Fact that he might have just been a little down and out being in Cincinnati, because when you get to Matt Kemp's, you know, age, 34, like he's really that old, but when you get to that part of your career, you don't really think about the individual stats anymore. Matt Kemp's already piled up all of those. You think about trying to get a ring.
Yeah.
And he got a lot further away from a ring this offseason, so I can understand why he got off to a slow start.
Do you have any predictions on where he might go?
Well, I think if it was up to him, yes, I do. I would say it would be a contending team in the American League, somebody that thinks maybe they can get one of those wild card spots.
He's just a dangerous guy to have on the bench anyway. If you need a pinch hitter, if you need the threat of a pinch hitter, he's there.
He's a good right-handed DH. I still think he would be beneficial to somebody like the Twins or, you know, just somebody in that kind of category that has a shot.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Number four.
All right, it's looking like being first to something is not always the best thing, because it was announced today that the XFL has a pretty good TV deal for next year's return as a league. They announced multi-year agreements with ESPN and Fox Sports to televise games starting next year. XFL games will air weekly on ABC and Fox, complemented by games on ESPN, ESPN2, Fox Sports 1, and Fox Sports 2, I assume. The XFL's TV schedule will feature back-to-back games each Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern and two games on Sunday afternoons. So, do you think the XFL has a better chance at success than the AAF did? And we'll start with you, Scraby.
Yes, I do, because the XFL seems like it's actually thinking about what they're going to do as a league, because the AAF, I remember when they announced the AAF, I wasn't working with Chris and Tony yet, but I thought, this is something that's going to start in less than a year. How could they get all this together? And it turns out that they couldn't. They tried to kind of fake it. They tried to get some guy to come in and give him money, and they did get a guy to come in and give him money, and then he said, well, this is not going to work. So I think that Vince McMahon, after the first failure of the XFL, I think that he's really trying to fix his original mistake and try to make this XFL thing, for whatever reason, he wants this to be a legacy of his, is this football league. So I do think it's a good thing, because they're going to be in more visible places than the AAF was. We talked about it all the time. We didn't even know when the game was. We didn't even know where the game was being played on TV. So with the XFL being on Fox and ABC and ESPN and ESPN2, they have all their different avenues figured out.
Chris?
Well, I'll answer your question first. Your question was, does it have a chance to be more successful than the AAF was? Doesn't have to do a whole heck of a lot to be more successful than the AAF was. All they have to do is play seven games. But having said that, I am just such a not Vince McMahon fan.
Really?
That I am really, and this is not fair to the people that are going to play in this league and their lives are going to depend on this league, but I hope it doesn't work. I hope the thing just blows up in his face. This guy, to me, is just an arrogant SOB, and I don't want to see him have success with a new football league. A lot of people out there in the world I would root for, but he's not one of them. So,
Don't you think he's a good businessman? He's created one of the kind of America's pastime. Wrestling is a little bit of America's pastime. WWE, WWF.
You know, I would be unfair to the wrestling fans out there if I said he wasn't a successful businessman, because he has been able to fill a void. It's kind of like, to me, though, wrestling is the TMZ of sports.
Ooh.
However,
it's sports
TMZ
entertainment.
Is very popular. So, you know, in this day and age, that's a very popular thing to be. So, yeah, I'll give Vince McMahon that much credit, but starting a real pro football league, I think that's beyond his means.
What about the fact that he's using his own money on this? It's not based upon investors funding the league.
We'll see how long that lasts. I mean, you know, if the first couple of weeks go by and the stadiums are, you know, one third full like they were for the AAF, Vince McMahon might be needing some money pretty soon. So I still think it's a long shot. Whether it was Vince McMahon running it or anybody, I think it's a long shot for a new football league to find a place in this country, because I don't think the NFL really wants it. And as long as the NFL doesn't really want something, it's going to be really hard to compete with that.
Number three.
Former Bills and Dolphins offensive lineman Richie Incognito is back. Mike Garafolo of the NFL Media reports that the Raiders worked out Incognito today. Incognito last played for the Bills in 2017 and announced his retirement last year before deciding he wanted to continue playing. The Bills released him, but Incognito never caught on with another team, but he did find himself in some legal trouble in the year when he was arrested following an incident at an Arizona funeral home after his father's death. He pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct last month and was sentenced to 11 months of probation and a 90-day suspended jail sentence. Incognito is also ordered to undergo mental health screening and is not the first time that he's had been questions about his mental state since he last played for the Buffalo Bills. Garofolo reports that Incognito is feeling well in all aspects. And with Incognito's past, do you think that he should be giving another chance to the NFL? Chris?
No. I really don't. I think he's had plenty of opportunities. I think it was about 10 years ago that he made the poor guy in the Dolphins cry and go home to his mommy. Richie Incognito guy is a little bit whack for me. I wouldn't want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. So I say no, but I understand that in this world we live in now, and the way the leagues are set up, if you can get the job done, and he would have to go out, obviously, and prove that he can get the job done still, but if he can, then there'll be a place for him. And there's always going to be a place for guys that can get the job done. I mean, Josh Gordon's up to about his 39th chance in the NFL, so Richie Incognito's only up to about his 5th or 6th. You know, like I said, I'm good at giving guys two or three opportunities. Once you start getting into double figures, I get a little tired of the narrative.
Scraby?
I would agree with Chris, because Richie Incognito, well, first off, he's going to be 36 before this next season starts. He's born on July 5th, so he's going to be up there in age. And I agree with Chris because I'm so tired of these guys getting so many chances and doing crazy, ridiculous things like yelling at people in a funeral home and teasing someone so much in professional football that
he dumbbell at the guy at the gym that was taking pictures of him.
That's another one. So that's a third thing. And I think that the NFL, with these kind of mental health issues, I think they need a 3 strikes and you need to go to rehab rule or something like that, because these guys are constantly getting chances. And being a guy who went through rehab and is in recovery for alcohol abuse, it's something that I wish someone would have stopped me. I wish someone would have cut me off. I wish someone would have tried to help me realize that what I was doing was ruining my life.
And are you saying to a certain extent you feel the NFL is enabling?
Oh, yeah. NFL enables a lot of guys.
Basically figure they can just keep getting away with making mistakes as long as they can play.
And that's why they're going to continue to make mistakes. That's why Richie Incognito is going to continue to throw dumbbells in a gym at someone, because if he does, it doesn't matter, because he's going to have a job. Like, if me or you, Chris or Thomas or Will, threw a dumbbell at someone, we would get fired, and then we would have to explain that in every other job that we went to in our lives. So I really wish that the NFL would do something and ban these, not ban, ban's a strong word, but at least force these guys into help before they give them another job.
If he lands with the Raiders, don't you think that is the perfect team for him to possibly finish his career with?
It sounds like it would be the perfect team for him to finish his career with, but I think Scraby brings up a more important point here, and that is the enabling of these pro leagues for these guys that continue to show that they cannot get their lives straight. I think you have to almost take away the ability to play in that league before they can finally get the help that they really truly need. So I think that's a great point by Scraby, and I can't believe I've now said that twice in the last 10 minutes.
When I went through rehab, there was a real possibility that I was going to lose my job, and so that was a driving force in me trying to get better, is so that I didn't lose my job and I didn't have to go out back on the streets and try to find a new job. So these guys, when they, you know, Richie Incognito can just sign a million-dollar deal just for being there, and it's kind of crazy, because when you don't have any consequences, you're not going to get better.
Great point.
Number two.
Dez Bryant is back on the field running and catching passes since tearing his Achilles just 2 days after signing with the New Orleans Saints last November. Dez wasn't signed until week 9 last season and is 30 years old coming off this injury. Do you think we will see Dez Bryant on a week 1 NFL roster? Scraby?
Week 1, huh? No. I don't think we're going to see him week 1, because he's smarter than that, and he's probably not even going to be ready by week 1, I wouldn't think, coming off of an Achilles tear. But as a 30-year-old, and he might pick up with a team like he did with the Saints, where they're going to sign him late in the year if they have a need for a wide receiver. And if he can provide them some goal line catches or something like that, I think that he'll be able to find a team. But week 1, I don't think so.
Chris?
Week 1, week 2, week 4, week 6, week 10, week 16, and 17.
Okay. All right, I was going to ask.
I just think Dez Bryant's, it's time. It's just time.
Move 30 on. Years old, though.
Yeah, but his skill is not anywhere near what it once was. And, I mean, look, didn't he try to make the Browns a couple of years ago?
Last year, before the year, he visited with the Browns, but he didn't go any further than that. Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
He took 9 weeks off and then signed with the Saints.
And then did he catch any passes with the Saints?
No, I think he tore his Achilles like the first practice.
Two days after signing his contract.
Yeah. I'm ready to move on again. I'm ready to move on from Dez Bryant. Some team will probably take a shot at him, but I'm gonna just go ahead and guess that he's not going to make it back to the NFL.
Okay.
It's a short shelf life in the National Football League. They don't mess around. I mean, I don't care if you're Dez Bryant or, you know,
Jerry Rice.
If you can't go out there and be productive And that doesn't mean just going out and running pass patterns. That just means catching balls and moving the chains. You're not going to play. I don't care who your name, what your name is. And I just think it's going to be very difficult for Dez Bryant to get back to that level after all this time off.
Good point.
Number one.
The 2019 season is feeling increasingly snake-bitten for the Washington Nationals. On top of losing 2 of 3 to the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend and missing half of their lineup due to injuries, the Nats team plane had an engine issue Sunday night, stranding the team in Philadelphia through the morning with the game in Milwaukee scheduled for tonight. According to Alex Schappel, who works for the Nationals radio network, she said the Nationals have been on the tarmac since 6:30 in the evening on Sunday with an engine issue. It's 2:45 on a Monday, and the Nats are still in Philly with a 6:40 first pitch in Milwaukee. The Nats finally reached Milwaukee around noon on Monday, just 7 hours before they're scheduled to take on the Brewers. So, do you think the game should have been moved or rescheduled? Chris?
No, I think the game should be played right as is. Washington just scored 2 runs in the top of the first inning. So
there you go.
Doesn't seem to be bothering him too much.
There you go.
Having said that, look, I've been on tarmacs for hours with teams. I remember coming back from Notre Dame 1 year with the Aztec football team. Believe it or not, the team plane ran out of gas in Kansas City. So it made it from South Bend to Indiana to Kansas City. That's as far as it made it.
Did they forget to gas up?
I can't even begin to tell you
what
crazy happened. We were on the tarmac for 3.5 hours while they had to get the right people and all the paperwork filled out to get some more gas and finally get home at, you know, God knows what time it was the next day. You know, traveling is not easy. It's part of the deal. But I think you can't move the game back 3-4 hours because you have 20,000 people at least that are planning to come to a game. You can't just all of a sudden call them all and, or even with social media and say, hey, you know what, we're going to play at 9 o'clock tonight, not 7 o'clock, so we're going to ask all your kids to stay up past midnight. The Nationals just have to suck it up, go out and play hard, just like they are apparently doing, because, as I said, they just put 2 runs up on the board in the first inning.
Scraby, real quick.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. They should play the game as is. This happens to professional teams all the time. It just so happened that their engine wasn't working, which would scare me a little bit more.
Yeah.
So you can't really do anything about
it. I wouldn't want to be on the tarmac. I would want to be off that plane and on another plane.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be on the engine issue plane.
Yeah. All right, that was our Big Five. Now brought to you by EcoWater Treatment Systems. For anywhere you drink water, your water perfected. Stay hydrated, San Diego. Scraby, you did pretty well.
Thank you. I was nervous.
Very well.
Thank you.
Nice
Thank
job. You want to throw out the first pitch for me tonight?
No, not one bit. No. I would be on ESPN.
You don't have that confidence. All right, 5 o'clock hour. Hunter Renfro, we talked to him earlier, the hero of yesterday, coming up on the program. Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us up here in the press box, first of all, I'm always very impressed with the work that this young lady does. Padre Annie Heilbrun from the San Diego Union-Tribune. And, you know, the thing I like, Annie, is that you've just kind of made yourself important in journalism in San Diego by just doing a great job. I mean, just hustling and putting together great pieces when we used to cover the Chargers, and now transferring that over to the Padres and hosting shows and doing interviews down on the field, traveling a little bit with the team and just doing profiles on these players. A little bit of everything and doing it all well. So congratulations on that.
Well, I really appreciate that. And what's great about that, Elo, is back in the day, you know, you were one of my first radio interviews back in the day when I was first coming up. And I just remember thinking, wow, like this is so cool to be on the radio and to be doing these interviews. And I just really appreciate you and the fact that you were always kind to me and all the work that I was doing. And I just, I remember that. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. No problem. And it's fantastic to see everything you're doing. Tell us a little bit about kind of what your number one thing at the UT is now. Because, I mean, it's like, yeah. I said, you're the master of so many aspects of this journalism world. So I'm never quite sure what you're focusing on 100%.
It's crazy because when the Chargers left and the Chargers were the main beat for me,
yeah,
it was kind of like there was a year of what do we do? You know, how do we approach this? And I think that what's been great now is I can really put a lot of focus into the Padres, and because of the Manny Machado signing, because of the fact that they're trying to gear up to 2020, 2021, there's a lot of stories now where before you didn't have as many, you didn't have as much that you could really talk about. So I would say primarily now I'm on Padres, but I just love good stories. So anything good that I can get my hand on around San Diego, whether that's with the Seals or whether that's with, you know, any kind of high school sports or anything like that, I love doing that. And at the UT, you know, as you know, Chris, there's so much change, especially in, you know, in the newspaper industry and in the media industry as a whole. So I think we're just trying to all figure it out and keep, you know, video. Luckily for me, they still see video as an important part of the newspaper and what the newspaper delivers, and I still get to write every once in a while as well, which is, yeah, what I started doing was in print journalism. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun where I'm lucky that I got kind of, you know, get to do a whole lot of different things.
What's your best strategy advice to somebody who's coming up in journalism and wants to do kind of, you know, feature type stories like you do, great human interest stories? What's the best advice in a way, because I'm going to listen to the answer to this as well. What's the best way to get athletes to open up a little bit?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, what's your strategy? Because it's not easy. I mean, these guys are, yeah, they don't know you at first, you know, and they don't want to tell you a whole bunch of stuff about themselves until they maybe get to know you a little bit and get to trust you. But to get the fun human interest stories, you, yeah, have to be able to delve a little deeper than just, hey, what'd you think about the game today? You know,
no, I think
so.
It's interesting. I think that I've been asked this, and I had to think about it once for a class that I was talking to you before, and I think it's a few things. I think it's being around a lot because they see you're hustling and they see you're working. Yeah. And when I say being around, I don't mean just standing around, you know, looking at them, but actually working and hustling and trying to do good stories and things like that. So they do notice that sort of thing. And then I think it's always acting with integrity because, you know, one kind of bad move, they all talk to each other. And if you kind of get,
oh boy,
bookmarked,
yeah,
as that person that blows things out of context or things like that, then I think that can hurt you. So always acting with integrity. And then I think it's just being a human, you know, like you have to, you can't just look at them like athletes and, you know, you just feed me my quote and I go on my merry way. I mean, some people do that, but it's, you have to kind of be, look at them as humans. And I think that's what I've always tried to do is just see them as one human to another trying to get by each day, you know, and like, how can we like learn from each other on that, you know? So it's kind of just taking more of an interest in them besides what they're doing on the field.
What do you think of the makeup of this particular Padre team in this clubhouse? I mean, obviously they're more successful than other Padre teams. And from everything I've heard, this clubhouse just really seems to mesh very well together.
You know, I've been part of clubhouses or locker rooms where they say that. They're like, oh, we really get along. We've got great camaraderie and chemistry. And it's really just kind of blowing smoke. Like, it's not really the real thing. You know, by midseason, it falls apart, you know. And here, I don't think that. I think that they really, truly, genuinely like each other. There's the fact that you've got guys like Eric Hosmer, who they all point to as the superstar, and the fact that he takes the time to learn everybody's, you know, kind of their wives, their children. He treats all of them as if they are on that status with him or not. I think that the way that the veterans have gone about that, it's really kind of leveled out the clubhouse where everybody feels like they're on the same page. Everybody feels happy to be around one another. But they have a lot of fun. Like, in the clubhouse, it's a really, really light clubhouse. They're always having a lot of fun, joking with each other. So it is sincere, and I think that's why you see a lot of them grinding every game to find a way to win, because I think they really, in baseball especially, you know, you can just care about your own stats, really, you know. But I really think they like to, you know, help the other guy win a game, you know. So I think that's a good trait for them so far.
Annie Heilbrun from the San Diego Union-Tribune is with us here at Petco Park. Padres and Mets tonight. How about my guy? He's not my guy, but I interviewed him one time. And since I got to interview him one time, I called him Manny Machado. But what about Manny Machado? He's you know what? He came with a I don't want to say baggage, but he certainly came with a bit of an attached attitude.
A stigma.
Yeah. Good. And I think he's wiped that out completely since he's been in San Diego. It seems to me that he's worked very hard to do that.
Definitely. And I think, you know, when you see him doing stuff like he did with Blooper with the
mascot.
In Atlanta. I mean, when you see him just kind of playing around, doing all those videos, acting like a kid, you know, like a child would, like a fun, you know, at a baseball game. I mean, those are the sort of things where it's like this guy just wants to be out there having fun, working hard, and being around his teammates. I mean, he really just doesn't exude any of the negative things that were said about him coming in the clubhouse. He is just one of the guys. I mean, he's playing basketball with, you know, the rest of the guys. They've got a hoop, a little mini hoop in there, just kind of hanging out, and they all love him. And so I think that he's really, you know, by being himself, he's gotten rid of kind of that stigma that we've seen come with him into it. But I just think he just really just enjoys playing baseball and being around his teammates and having fun. And I just don't think it's like more complicated than that, really. So it's been fun getting to know him and having him around and kind of learning from him as well as he kind of navigates this new team.
Watching him play is fun too.
Yeah, watching him.
God, he's good.
You know what's crazy? That play at shortstop yesterday where he slid around, he did one of those little like, you know, slides on his knees. He makes it look so smooth. But what's amazing is like he's at shortstop, you know, and I know he can play both positions, but what a luxury that you can move him from third to short to wherever. And the guy doesn't look, I mean, just effortless, you know.
It looks effortless, but it's because he practices a lot, too. People don't really see all that. He probably takes more ground balls than anybody. That's why he makes it look so smooth.
And, you know, Kevin, just on that, there was a story in the Union Tribune by Kevin Acey over the spring training where he intentionally gets bad, you know, bad balls toward him so that he can practice, you know, having to navigate that. So I think that exactly that, like he puts so much work into it.
Yeah, people think that he is naturally gifted. There's no question.
Yes.
But he's taken it to the level he's taken it to because he's worked so hard, and it's a good message to pass along to everybody. Annie, the home run, the grand slam yesterday, where did that rank in the thrills? I know you didn't have the post-game interview on the field.
Right.
Sometimes you do, but that probably saved you from getting doused with Gatorade anyway. But that had to rank right up there with one of the big thrills. For Padre fans, the players, everyone who saw that yesterday, it was really something.
It was one of the best for sure. And I think, honestly, and we were talking to Andy Green about this after the media scrum today, I think because of the tension, not the tension, that's probably not the right word, but the way the first two games had gone and the fact that it just hadn't popped yet. Like, you know, if he didn't hit that grand slam or they didn't score, that's it. You're going into this Mets series down another game, never have gotten one against the Dodgers yet. You know, it would have just felt so different. And so I think that part of that grand slam was the buildup of Friday and Saturday not going the way they wanted and not ending the way that they had hoped, but being close games. And so when you saw Hunter Renfrow with his arms in the air, and everyone's seen that picture now, like that was like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday rolled into one in that moment.
You know? Yeah,
it was just big. It was really big for that clubhouse. I think that they're very aware that, like, you know, they obviously would have wanted to win Friday and Saturday, but winning Sunday like that in that fashion did a lot for them. That's for sure.
They know they can compete with the Dodgers.
Yeah. And they like this atmosphere. You know, I mean, I know it was a lot of Dodgers fans, and we expect that, but they liked the fact that it felt – there was booing, there was cheering, there was like, you just felt like it was important, you know, and I think that was a lot of fun for them.
There was buzz.
Buzz, booing and cheering. What do you think you're going to have when you throw out that first pitch, Ello?
Booing.
Booing or cheering?
Booing.
I'm going to boo.
Yeah, Scraby will be leading the boos.
Yeah.
So he'll probably have him put a boo, B-O-O, up on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I'm going to go talk to the scoreboard people
to the scoreboard people.
Did you practice? I mean, what is your strategy
that's what I said.
Here? You know?
I have no strategy other than to do everything possible not to completely, totally embarrass myself, but I'm not 100% sure I can avoid that from happening.
This is fantastic. I know Scraby's going to get it on video, so
it's going to be,
you know, no
Very
matter
much
what.
So.
Yeah.
It'll go viral one way or the other.
Yes.
You're nervous. I can feel it.
Oh, I'm totally nervous. Yeah, okay. I've been nervous since I found out about it. They told me, like, last Wednesday. I don't think I've had, like, seven restless nights of sleep in a row.
Every once in a while, when Chris stops talking, I look over, and he's just, like, focused on the
match.
He's just like staring at the mound like, bring me the power.
From here, it really looks a long way away from home plate.
It does.
Just looks like a long throw there. I don't know.
I love it.
Thanks, Annie, for joining us.
Hey, I love it. Anytime, you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Annie Heilbrun from the San Diego Union Tribune, Gwen and Chris. We continue, and when we do, our countdown is coming up, and also a visit that we got today with the man of the hour, Hunter Renfroe. Hear what he had to say about his game-winning Grand Slam yesterday. That's still to come. Gwen and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, time now for our countdown. Let's go.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, today's countdown focuses on the greatest possible way you can win a game or a sporting event. I would imagine hitting a walk-off Grand Slam's got to be up there somewhere on the list.
I would think so.
So Scraby's going to step in for Tony Jr., who's off doing TV right now. Tony will be back with me. We got an interview with Hunter Renfroe coming up in about 10 minutes, 7, 8 minutes, actually. So stick around. You'll hear what Hunter Renfroe had to say about his game-winning Grand Slam in just a little bit. But, Scraby, we're going to count down the top five ways you can win a game or a sporting event, whatever the case may be. And I'm going to let you, as the guest on today's countdown, go first.
Well, the first.
What's your number five?
Number five.
You got to wait for the number. There it is.
I waited for the number, and I didn't wait for the number. That happens to everyone who goes first.
That's right. That's why I made you go first.
All right. My number five is specifically something that I remember this one thing, and it was when DeSean Jackson ran back a punt against the New York Giants when he was an Eagle. So my number five is a walk-off punt or kick return.
A walk-off punt or kick return.
Yes. That is pretty darn exciting.
You know, in the history of the NFL, I believe the overtime opening kickoff has only been returned for a touchdown, I believe, only one time.
Really?
In the history of the game. It may have happened again, but I know it happened on Thanksgiving back in the 80s. Chicago Bears did it against the Detroit Lions. But walking off with a kickoff return in overtime. Not bad.
That's pretty good. I mean, that DeSean Jackson punt, I think it...
That was with a couple seconds to go. A
couple seconds. Tom Coughlin said, kick it away from him. The punter didn't kick him away from him. I think the Giants missed a playoff spot because of that kick and that punt return.
That was a great comeback. Michael Vick got like four touchdowns in the last three minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Jackson ran the punt back. All right, my number five way to win a sporting event would be with a three-point basket at the buzzer, swish. The reason I put that fifth is because we actually see that quite often. You know, game comes down to the wire. Guy puts up the last second shot. He makes it. I think it's awesome. I think in order to qualify for the ranking, you actually have to be trailing when you take the shot.
Okay.
There's a difference to me as opposed of score tie.
Yeah.
Because if you miss, then you go to overtime.
Yeah.
I want you to make the shot when you're losing.
Much more pressure packed.
Now it's a pressure packed deal, but I think that that's still my number five way to win a game would be with a three pointer that I swish in at the buzzer.
Number four.
Mine is somewhat similar, but it's more of a March Madness buzzer beater. I think I could rank this anywhere on this list because March Madness has that excitement about it. You get a guy who's playing college basketball, might be on TV for the first time in his life or national TV, and he hits a game winner.
It's also a single elimination tournament. So,
yeah,
you make the shot or you go home.
So I love a good old March Madness buzzer beater.
Good one, Scraby. Good. All right, my number four is, I'll just refer to it, get the sounder ready, Thomas, as the miracle in Miami. I love.
That is a great one.
That's a great way to win a football game, isn't it?
I didn't even think about that.
Come on, a 12 lateral play. I mean, how many times have you actually ever seen that? Like it's only happened two or three times.
The Cal Stanford game from way
Cal
back
when. Cal Stanford way back when. I think the Saints did it once.
The field.
I think the Saints did it one time. The Music City Miracle. Thank you, Thomas. But, yeah, the Miami Miracle this year with Kenyon Drake scoring the touchdown. That ranks number four for me as the greatest way to win a sporting event.
Number three.
My number three is golden goal in a World Cup game.
Yuck.
Yuck. I know you're going to say that, but it has to be World Cup because that's when the whole world is watching. All the stakes are on the line.
I know.
And you are the one who's going to put your team either in the championship game or whatever, but golden goal is my number three.
Number three. All right. My problem with golden goal is that I've fallen asleep before the golden goal happens. I'm not sitting there for 4 hours until somebody puts a goal in. I can't do it.
We were locked in on this summer's World Cup, so don't act like you weren't all pumped
right,
about it.
All right. Number three for me is, you're going to like this one, a chip-in to win the Masters
Ooh.
Or the U.S. Open.
Ooh.
Similar to what Tom Watson did to the great Jack Nicklaus back in the 80s at Pebble Beach.
I'm a 17th hole.
I'm talking about like an impossible lie, impossible shot. The guy you're competing with down the stretch on 18 or 17 is on the green in good shape, and you turn it all around with a magical shot like something like that. Or Tiger Woods' chip on 16 at the Masters that year that rolled back down
yes.
the hill.
Yes.
You win a Masters or U.S. Open with something like that, that's a memory of a lifetime. So I'll put that number three.
That Watson chip that you're talking about, people have said that they've tried to recreate that in rough that wasn't even U.S. Open rough.
And no one's ever come close.
Never come close. That was just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Once-in-a-lifetime. That's why I got number three for me.
Number two.
Now, my number two is golf-related, but it's a walk-off hole-in-one.
Yeah, but that
and
can't
it does
happen.
Happen.
Come on. There's no par threes on 18.
Yes. At the Las Vegas Shriners Open like 4 years ago, Jonathan Bird and them went to a playoff hole.
Oh.
It was a par three. The guy before, or actually, he hit the hole-in-one, so it wasn't really technically a walk-off.
Because the other guy had to hit one to match him?
If he got a hole-in-one, it would have matched him. Didn't even come close.
No.
Walk-off hole-in-one is my number two.
That's just too improbable that I didn't
it's
even
happened.
Consider
that's
it.
Why I said it.
All right. My number two is a walk-off grand slam. I don't know when the last time I saw one was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But I think it's pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
to end a game, especially the way Renfro did it last night because the Padres were losing and they were down to their last out. That's a whole lot different than doing it with nobody out and a tie score. It was an 0-1 count, but they were down to their last out and they were losing and he wins the game. That's number two. Walk-off grand slam like that.
Considering the last two nights, on Friday night, Austin Hedges struck out and Greg Garcia struck out on Saturday night, so he was staring down the third strikeout.
He was cool. He came through with a magical moment indeed. You'll hear about it in a couple minutes when we interview him. Number one.
My number one is a grand slam, but it's not just a regular walk-off grand slam. It's the ultimate walk-off grand slam, which means that your team is down three runs, and the only way that you're able to win this game is if you hit a grand slam to put you up by one and win.
The ultimate grand slam, does that include two outs?
Yes,
down to your last out?
It
should.
Everything.
I think it's got to be down to the last swing.
Yeah. Okay. We'll say that. Yeah.
All right. I think you're going to be surprised and stunned by number one.
Is it disqualification at the Kentucky Derby?
It's not. But it has to do with horse racing.
Oh, I was close. What the heck?
You were close. The number one way to win a sporting event is to have a bet on a horse. I don't care if it's $2 or $200. But on a horse that's about 12 lengths back with 100 yards to go in a horse race, and then all of a sudden, like shot out of a cannon, here comes your horse flying through the pack, picking its way through other contestants, and getting to the wire a half a nose in front and winning the race. I think that's the most exciting thing because you feel like it's happening to you.
Well, yeah, because you got money on the line.
Because you got a little money on it. That's right.
I'm surprised.
So that's my number one. There you go. How do you like that?
Our boss and I are looking at each other like, what in the world? You didn't do anything hockey.
Nah, overtime hockey goal happens all. It happens like 20 times per postseason.
And you didn't.
I'm looking for something that happens, you know, not every day.
Well, neither of us did Hail Mary. I thought about the Hail Mary, but
I did the miracle in Miami. That's as good.
No, that doesn't count. That's like a
hook and ladder. Why does that count?
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Thomas, for the Dolphin.
That counts. The miracle in Miami will always count. All right, that's our countdown for today.
The countdown is now closed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.